This program is brought to you by the Museum of the Second World War in Gdansk, as part of the World Battlefield Museums Forum. Welcome. Courage, sacrifice, and heritage are values crucial to understanding battlefields and reflecting on the fate of man and his historic struggles. As places of remembrance and focal points to pay our respects, battlefields bring back images of the past we can explore and research. Preserving and conserving battlegrounds, artifacts, and infrastructure for future generations should be our major goal. Only when this goal is achieved can we think of battlefields as open-air museums and commercial tourism destinations. After all, battlefields are guardians of memory shaping our collective historical identity.
The Battle for Narvik. In early 1940, when fighting was continuing in Finland after it had been attacked by the Soviet Union in what is known as the Winter War, the Allies considered helping the Finns through Narvik and the Swedish mining basin. But when Finland and the Soviet Union negotiated peace in March, the plan was abandoned. At the same time, Germany, seeing a risk of having its influence in Scandinavia limited, decided to seize Denmark and Norway, which were neutral countries, to secure its supply of iron ore and gain important naval bases necessary for waging an effective war against Great Britain. Adolf Hitler ordered the invasion of Norway. The operation was codenamed Weserübung. The German attack began on April the 9th, 1940. Denmark hardly resists. Norway, however, fights to defend itself. King Haakon the 7th of Norway.
It is Germany that has dictated this. It is Germany that for no reason has invaded our small country, as it has since invaded other small neutral countries. I might try to characterize Germany's attack on Norway, but today I will not make any attempt of such a terrible task. I leave it to the judgment of history, and I have no doubt that it will be an eternal shame for Germany. Germany said it came to protect us. The protection has consisted of bombing other cities and defenseless small homes in the countryside. And Germany has done this without any reason on our part.
Nick Hewitt from the Royal Navy Museum in Portsmouth and Wojciech Łukaszun from the Museum of the Second World War in Gdansk.
Norway's position at the start of the Second World War is very simple. Norway is neutral, really very nervous, sitting on the fence, trying not to offend or overly favour either side, very aware that they're stuck in the middle of this confrontation that's going on. So nervously neutral is Norway's status. Norway's a very, very difficult place to fight a war. Unless you use the sea, it's virtually impossible to campaign in it because the internal communications, the land communications, are very difficult. Very small number of single railway lines, small number of roads, generally quite poor quality, incredibly difficult terrain to traverse if you're not using the road. So control of the sea is absolutely paramount if you're going to do anything in Norway. The British are very aware of the strategic significance of Norway generally and Narvik in particular. In the run-up to April 1940, British are laying sea mines in Norwegian territorial waters to kind of force the German shipping out to sea, where the British can then attack it. At the same time, the Germans are developing a plan for a fully-fledged invasion of Norway. The Germans deploy almost their entire navy, which is much smaller than the British navy, to insert troops into all of the principal Norwegian ports. Merchant ships and transports carrying soldiers, supported by warships, appear off the Norwegian coast simultaneously in the morning, in the dark. They arrive off Oslo, they arrive off Bergen and other ports, and they arrive off Narvik. And the Germans insert their troops into Narvik with a force of destroyers that take the German troops in. But it uses almost all their fuel and endurance to get to Narvik because it's so far away. They successfully land their invasion force. There is a fairly nasty little action with two Norwegian coast defence battleships, the Norge and the Eidsvold, which are both sunk with heavy loss of life. Bear in mind they're attacking a neutral country. As daybreak, Germans are in possession of Narvik.
The Polish Navy also took part in sea operations during the Norwegian campaign. One of the first successes was the sinking of the German cargo ship Rio de Janeiro by the Polish submarine Orzeł. The news of this event was one of the first broadcasts by the Germans announcing the start of their Norwegian campaign. A Polish destroyer force composed of Błyskawica, Burza and Grom vessels provided protection for the Allied convoys and artillery support for the troops on land. On the 3rd of May, Grom was sunk with a bomb from a German aircraft. Cruise ships Sobieski, Chrobry and Batory were pressed into service as well and took part in the Norwegian campaign to ship cargo and military personnel.
The Germans used almost their entire navy. Any notion that the Germans could have mounted an invasion of England is completely ridiculous, and that's because their fleet has been eviscerated in Norway.
Narvik is where mountains meet the Atlantic. It is as far north from Oslo as Italy is to the south. This Viking settlement that goes back to the Bronze Age became a strategic port for the Gjelivare and Kiruna iron ore mines, as it was the only accessible ice-free port and could handle ships 25 meters deep and 200 meters in length. This led to the construction of a railway line to the mines. The start of World War II created an insatiable appetite for iron ore for the German war machine. This key component to produce steel was available in Sweden, but in winter it was only accessible via this ice-free Atlantic port. Allied command spotted this opportunity as a way to seriously hinder the German war effort. Hitler's army had other ideas. April 1940 saw the start of a series of events that led to this heroic showdown. Eystein Markusson of the Narvik Senteret in Norway.
In the early hours of the morning of 9th of April 1940, Nazi Germany attacked Norway in six different harbors. Narvik was the northernmost of those, well above the Arctic Circle. The immediate attack meant the sinking of the Eidsvoll and Norge, killing 282 Norwegian sailors immediately. Over 2,000 German soldiers took the city. In the following days, two major sea battles occurred, with also three Polish ships participating under Allied command, sinking several German destroyers, and on the 13th of April, they sunk the remaining ones. A total of 10 German destroyers sunk.
The Norwegians were fighting courageously at various locations to save their country from an unprovoked attack from an oppressive dictatorship.
In the aftermath of that, Norwegian forces gathered in the north to retaliate. Allied forces came in with Polish, French and British forces.
Anne Christian Christiansen of the Narvik Centre in Norway.
Between 11,000 and 12,000 Allied forces, were about 3,000 of them were Polish soldiers. if you look at the descriptions from the German side, they are most fearful of the Polish soldiers.
The Polish drove the southern flank of the land battle, of the mountain war that was done. It's an outstanding effort. At that point, the German forces were almost forced over the border to Sweden. On 28th of May, the town of Narvik was recaptured by the Allied forces. French Foreign Legionaries and Norwegian forces was the first one in. A total of 8,500 people were killed during the Battle of Narvik. 64 or 65 ships, it's debated, were sunk, making it one of the greatest battles of the Atlantic during the Second World War. And also, the city of Narvik was almost totally destroyed.
Although this campaign demonstrated the need for land and air battles to be coordinated, another key feature was the involvement of various international allies who were able to work together both at sea and on land. This became a founding principle for modern military alliances. The Norwegians were supported by a motivated international coalition of forces: the British, the French, and many Poles. General Bohusz Szyszko, commander of the Polish Independent Highland Brigade.
Wyruszył z wybrzeża i poprzez grzbiety zasypane bardzo głębokimi śniegami.
We moved out from the coastal area, and after crossing high snow-covered peaks with the support of Norwegian skiers, we moved very quickly through very difficult conditions. This surprised the Germans, who fled in disarray. This was our first successful action against the Germans, not just of our fighting abilities, but also our tactics. After more heavy fighting, our Polish units overran the German positions one by one, forcing them out of their mountain nests.
Marsz ten zaskoczył Niemców. Niemcy, których batalion polski obszedł, w popłochu uciekli.
By late evening, we moved down into the valleys and retook the hamlet of Basefjord. This village was behind German lines, so we were able to take control of the only supply and retreat route the Germans had.
This program is brought to you by the Museum of the Second World War in Gdansk as part of the World Battlefield Museums Forum.
Wojciech Łukaszun of the Museum of the Second World War in Gdansk.
On April the 24th, 1940, the Polish Independent Highland Brigade set off from France Basie. The brigade was a part of French-British units that were dispatched to fight in Norway. The brigade was commanded by General Zygmunt Bohusz Szyszko. The brigade's organization was modeled on the French army. Also, uniforms and weapons were from the French supplies. First, Polish soldiers guarded the harbor and the town of Narvik, which was an important supply base for the Allied troops. From the 12th of May, the brigade, divided into single battalions, took part in the Allied attack on Gratangan Bierkwik. From the 17th of May, the Poles took part in the battle for the Ankenes Peninsula, south of Narvik. During the attack on Narvik by the French and Norwegian troops, the Polish soldiers on the other side of the fjord captured the German-held towns of Ankenes, Nyborg and Biesfort. In the final phase of the battle, the Poles reached the road connecting Narvik with the Norwegian-Swedish border, cutting off the German retreat route. The operation of the Polish troops allowed the French Foreign Legion to take Narvik. Between June the 4th and the 6th, the brigade left their positions and was evacuated from Norway together with the rest of the Allied units.
This peaceful town in the far north of Norway suddenly became the center of a major worldwide conflict. Sadly, as is often the case, it is not just the military that made sacrifices, as is clear from this authentic radio interview conducted on June 1, 1940, by a Radio Norway reporter with Borghild Valen, a housewife from Narvik.
Yes, it is dangerous and many, many houses are damaged. Very, very damaged. And in the first days, many people tried to get away and there was complete panic. Then it was quiet for a while and now evacuation has started again in the last few days. Since many of our family members were evacuated, we moved in together with friends, acquaintances and so on to manage as best as we can. We shared a home and thought it was lovely to come together in this terrible time. When the electrical plant was destroyed, all the power was completely gone. It was difficult with cooking and such. Many households only had an electric stove, so they had to use camping equipment for cooking. We have tried to manage as best as we can, but there are terrible shortages. I even heard from the head nurse at the hospital that they only have 3 liters of milk left. After the British arrived and the German bombing began, we were told that we had to move again because that part of the city was considered dangerous. So we moved to another part of the city, closer to the Red Cross at Borlaugstunnelen. My children, Stasius and Sverre, got away to Drammen. And I just really hope that they are going to be all right.
As Norway was falling under the shadow of occupation, Nordahl Grieg wrote his famous poem, which he himself read over the airwaves from the last free radio station in May 1940, to help people remember and give hope.
Today, the flagpole stands naked among Eidsvoll's green trees. But precisely in this hour, we know what freedom is. There rises a song over the land, triumphant in its language, though whispered with closed lips under the yoke of strangers. Worse than burning cities is the war that no one can see, that puts a toxic veil of slime on birches and soil and snow. With anxiety and terror, they defiled our homes. We had other dreams, and we cannot forget them. Here we will remember the dead, who gave their lives for our peace. The soldier in blood on the snow, the sailor who went down. We are so few in this country. Each fall is brother and friend. We have the dead with us the day we come again.
The guns around Narvik have fallen silent, but it is our responsibility to tell the story for future generations. Anne Christian Christiansen.
The foundations I work to promote knowledge about and understanding for peace and the rules of war, international conventions and human rights through research, documentation and dissemination with a particular geographic focus on the High North. The foundation should base its work on the values of the Red Cross as presented in the fundamental principles humanity, impartiality, neutrality and independence. The mission of the foundation is of a common ideal character.
Eystein Markusson.
And of course, being founded on the Battle of Narvik in 1940, the Battle of Narvik and in the region here is central to the work of our institution. And we also Being funded by the Ministry of Education in Norway, we have a particular task to educate young people and schools about the events during the war, but also how these affected the civilian population.
It's also important for us to not only talk about the Second World War, but also demonstrate some of the lines from Second World War and up until today in relation to human rights, human values, maybe especially with the youngsters, how you treat people.
And how do we reach out to the younger generation?
For the younger generation, we travel to schools, well, the whole of Northern Norway. We also have a lot of schools visiting us, mainly from Northern Norway, but also from northern parts of both Sweden and Finland. People travel with the younger generation to visit us, but we also travel to visit the younger generations. We have specific educational programs towards the younger generation, where we try to tell the story sort of more on their terms, and especially focus on why is war history relevant for the younger generation. We also participate in a lot of debates. We hold seminars concerning Second World War history. We do a lot of documentations, also in terms of interviews of witnesses in regards of soldiers, but also lately a lot of interviews of people being children during the Second World War, because naturally a lot of these people are getting a lot older. And so it's very important for us to document what happened also in the local community, not only in the sort of larger picture, but it's also important for us to document the sort of smaller histories, what happened in the different parts of the city or in the different parts of the region that we work with.
I might also add that we, when working on the new exhibitions for the museum, we took great care to make sure that the texts are suited and understandable for teenagers, and also that the level of information that is available in the museum is understandable and interesting to teenagers and youngsters. Our educational programs are developed both for smaller children and also for teenagers and youngsters, so we try to level the information and the educational programs in such a way that it's interesting and understandable to them all.
Eystein Markusson.
In the immediate aftermath after the Second World War in Norway, it was very well known, it was written about, and the story of the battle was upheld. However, that faded during the 70s and 80s. Lately, there's been a renewed interest in the battle. We have new facilities here at our museum, a major feature film being produced as we speak, one of the largest productions in Norway. On another level, which is also interesting in terms of collective memory, is that most of the Norwegian soldiers fighting here were local boys, and they were mostly fishermen, farmers, clerks who were used to the Arctic conditions that the fighting goes on in. It's been a matter of pride, particularly in the last 20 years, that these not very military educated guys were able to uphold that law. Among the Norwegian army and the Norwegian armed forces, the Battle of Narvik is seen as Norway's finest hours in terms of battle. And it upholds several firsts in international military history. It's the first time Allied forces cooperates in a land, sea and air battle. It's the first time fighting in these kind of Arctic conditions are done outside of railroad and road. There's many interesting aspects to it, both military, because it's a very compact war theater, and it's also some firsts.
Anne Christian Christiansen.
We have 62 days of war, 62 days of active battle, which means that in Norway, it's Northern Norway who endure the longest. During the battles, there are fierce battles in the mountain areas surrounding Narvik and also close to the city areas. And it's here Hitler has his first strategic loss, which is quite remarkable. And that also brings us the important role of telling this story. We have a responsibility for keeping the story alive, maybe especially towards youngsters.
Narvik shows us how bravery and determination against all odds can be victorious. Wojciech Łukaszun of the Museum of the Second World War in Gdańsk.
The capture of Narvik by the Allies prevented the Germans from using the port to ship Swedish iron ore only for a limited time. In general, the Narvik victory was one of the few land-based successes for Allied troops during the Norwegian campaign. But the battle was important in its own right. It was the first and only land victory of the Allied troops at the time of the worsening military situation in France. Also, the capture of the town enabled effective evacuation of the British, French and Polish troops. For the Polish soldiers, the battle had special significance. It was the first armed clash with the German units since the Polish campaign of September 1939. The fact that the battle was won boosted the morale of the soldiers and of the general public in occupied Poland. The successes of the Polish soldiers in the battle fought in forbidding and icy mountain conditions earned them respect of the Allied commanders. In recognition of their merits in the battle, the Norwegian authorities in exile in Great Britain awarded Polish soldiers with an official cord with a gold shield with a Norwegian lion on it.
The battles for Narvik were a first in many areas. Most importantly, it proved that the invincible German army could be defeated. The key lesson we can learn from Narvik is that successful campaigns, even if short-lived, give hope for others to fight on. This was Hitler's first defeat. Norway, together with France, Great Britain, and Poland, demonstrated that working together, this dreadful scheme to enslave other nations could be stopped. And it was hope that gave people the will to fight on and end the deadliest conflict in history. History is there to help us remember and learn from the past. But whoever is unaware of history is doomed to repeat it.
This program is brought to you by the Museum of the Second World War in Gdansk as part of the World Battlefield Museums Forum.